Welcome to Decades From Home, a podcast about Germany. I'm Nick Houghton of 40%German.com, and I'm joined by our man in the Nürnbergerland, Simon Maddox, and coming straight out of Bonn, stalwart producer Simon Josie, to discuss the weird and wonderful side of living in Germany. Hi, Simon. I'm not even going to say hi to producer Simon because he's not on mic. He's not here. I am still very disappointed. But hi, Simon.
You all right? How's it going?
Yeah.
Long time no see.
I know, it's been ages. Yeah, I mean, look, this is ridiculous. Inside baseball here, listeners, we're recording two episodes back to back because we've got holidays and producer Simon's traveling around and doing fun stuff. So yeah, let's hope this is the psychotic energy episode record. What do you reckon? I've drank lots of coffee at this point.
I've made myself cold brew for tomorrow.
Nuclear, that's nuclear. I had two bananas before we started, so they're kicking in right now.
Potassium off the charts.
Yeah, it's the rocket fuel that I need to podcast at my highest performance levels.
I just had a chicken salad. I'm not ready.
Hey, proteins, yep. good. Bit of salad in there, you know, bit of health food.
Yep.
Loads of mayonnaise.
No mayonnaise, no. I have salad cream. I was like, I'm not going to have the salad cream.
You trooper, mate.
Yeah. Well, and then I looked at the salad cream and it's 1% fat. I'm like, fuck. Oh. I could have had it all.
It's good. It's if it's the fats you want, to want to avoid them sugars. Anyway, less of our dietary requirements. This is clearly our psychotic part coming out very early on. So let's wrangle this podcast into some kind of shape. So, Simon, would you like to have some good news? Sure you do. It's been gloomy around these parts for too long. We need some optimism, some light at the end of the tunnel.
I mean, if cartoons have taught me anything, the light at the end of a tunnel is an oncoming train. No?
Okay, Wittgenstein. Clearly you're in more need of some good news than I thought. Well, mate, it turns out we're finally going to be living in modern Germany, Simon. We're going to be living in modern Germany.
Right. Well, I mean, that is a little bit underwhelming as far as like news goes.
You're not getting it, mate. You're not getting it. Right now, this very second, today, we're in old Germany. Old Germany, where Digitalisierung is a mere fantasy and all paperwork must be printed on one of those Gutenberg printing presses and faxed in triplicate. Now, though, well, not now, but like May, to be precise, we're going to enter the future.
Well, I guess that's how time works, so yeah.
Of passport photos, though, the future of passport photos.
Passport photos, okay. Tell me more.
Yeah, okay, let me explain, because that is clearly insane. But yes, we are entering the future, and it is going to involve very specifically passport photos. So up until now, if you wanted to get a passport in Germany, you were required to have a paper biometric photo, usually from a professional photographer, a photo booth, or somewhere like a drugstore, such as DM or Rossmann, who weirdly we mentioned last week, which can provide passport photos too. And from May, Germans will no longer need to submit a paper copy. And in some instances, get this, the Bürger bureaus will have a camera on site to take the photo while you're applying for your passport. Oh my good God. This seems like a minor change, obviously. But it does make me wonder what's going to happen to all those independent photo shops that you see everywhere across Germany. Do you think there's going to be a bit of a problem for those guys?
Well, they're not everywhere, are they? They're within 100 meters of all city bureaus.
It's like, true. It's
near the Auslandbehörde. Immigration officers, there are five. And of course, the first one is really nice, but very expensive. The second one, a little bit worse and a little bit cheaper. And eventually, after going to number four, you find the one that is the best balance between it will take a photo and won't rip you off.
There's a guy with an iPhone.
Yes,
I'll do you.
I mean, it's funny you talk about this because I had to renew my British passport recently and this technology exists already. So I was able to take a selfie on my Google phone and it said that it had all the requirements it had to meet. And one of them was like the background can't be edited. And because I live in a house that was decorated not by us, all of the wallpaper is like popcorn wallpaper, that lovely effect stuff, which are lovely to the touch, but it looks really shit. And so I had to edit that out and it was approved, even though I had edited the background. So they're not very good at spotting manipulation of photos, but it was taken. It was approved and I got it really, really quickly. So yeah, this works and I'm pleased that Germany has got on board.
Yeah, I mean, with the regards to the passport photos that you were just talking about, I think it's as long as it's, I mean, they probably ascertain what the editing element is potentially within the photo. I'm sure they've got that capability. Whether they actually use it or not is another question. But I was thinking, like, it's one of those markers of when I first came to Germany, of like, that's a massively weird, odd, obscure difference, was the fact that when I had to get write a CV, and I was like, you need to put a photo, certainly you did then, I think you still do now, really, you need to put a photo on your CV. And I was like, all right, well, I know there's a photo booth place in the train station, I'll just go get it done there. And everyone's like, no, you can't do it there, you've got to go to the shooting studio. And I'm like, okay, don't know what that is, sounds bad. And then you go and you get, you'd have like a bizarre interaction. Well, at least my interactions. Well, it was all Franconians, and my German was non-existent at that point. So every interaction was really bizarre. So you'd have a bizarre interaction with a photographer, slightly artsy person, and then you'd have to like pose for a photo, and then that would be your photo that you would get, and it's official, and that would be your passport photo as well. But it was like one of those things. So I was like, why don't we just use a photo booth?
Well, it's that weird thing. It's like, that's the bread and butter for like every photography studio in Germany, is doing like biometric pass builder. And like, without those, I think there are going to be some people who are going to struggle to keep their businesses going to the same level they were before. I mean, you do see some incredible, incredible displays at these photo studios. I am immediately drawn to a child. I saw photos of a child posing with a pumpkin. It was just, oh, pure Herbst vibes. This book is just in the window of this photo studio for the next 5 years.
Yeah.
Traumatized every time, bullied by his school colleagues.
Yeah. You get a range of photos, and it's always like, yeah, you get the family photos and the kids' photos. But the thing I'm kind of like, that always blows my mind, is the amount of like, oh, sexy photo shoot for your husband, or sexy couples photo shoot. And then they put it in the window, and it's like some two randomers in like awkwardly posing in some kind of like lingerie, or usually it's the husband covering the breasts of the girlfriend or the wife. And it's just, it's really awkward. And I saw, in fact, there's a company around my way who has one of those, that specific image, the most awkward image possible, like as part of their collage of photos for their billboard. And I'm just like, every time I drive past, I'm like,
There was one that I used to live near, and it had erotic pregnancy photos.
I mean, more power to you if that's what you want. I'm just saying, like, maybe it's not the thing
But when you're 7 a.m. and you're on your way to the office, and it's like, do I need to see erotic pregnancies right now? No, I don't.
There's a lot of complicated emotions for 7 a.m.
There are people in America that I assume other countries do it, but the ones I've seen in America where they're like, use like body paints on the pregnancy belly to like draw like landscapes,
really?
Planets and stuff. It's a weird niche. Be like, I'm going to be really artistic with your belly.
I mean, pregnancy positivity and all that is all well and good,
yeah,
but I think
I'm all for that.
All for that, and sure. I mean, if you want to paint your pregnant belly, that I just question that. It's not so much, I guess, like pregnancy photos are not the thing that I was thinking about so much, but it is those cringy couples photos that I find utterly bizarre, and why anyone would allow that photo to be you've got to have real confidence in yourself to go like, yeah, I'll be the face of your company.
At the end of the photo shoot, go like, I'll tell you, I'll do you a 10% discount if you let me use some of these photos for a display. And you're like, yeah, all right. And then next thing you know, you walk past, you're like, what?
But we've got a friend, well, not a friend, it's an acquaintance that when you back in, like, it's 2007, 2008. And it was a lad and his partner, they got a photo and the similar kind of style. And that was used in the promotion. It's still in the shot window. It's 2025. I've seen it. I've walked past it. And I'm like, bloody hell, you're still there. So, I mean, it can be forever, those photos.
Yeah. So I think in many ways, the photo booth does save you from the dangers of having your boobs manhandled by your husband.
That's fine. It's having it publicized to the entire whole of your like local district that might be the quandary. But that's probably my hang up then, more than anything else.
But back to the passport photo, because there is something that I'm not sure if every city has, but I know that Nuremberg is going to do, which takes this to the next level, is, I mean, you have it in the notes that people will have their identity cards and passports delivered to them by post. So that's pretty exciting. You'll have to go somewhere and pick it up. But there are going to be three locations in Nuremberg where you can go and pick it up from an automat. Yeah.
I don't believe
one of them is just up the road from me, and I'm going to have to do my Aufenthaltstitel again by the end of the year. So I'm going to go and pick it up from there.
I'm actually really excited to hear how that works.
Yeah. I saw a picture of it, and it is an ugly monolith, like an empty room. The design was like, that'll do. That's an automat. That's what they all look like.
Utilitarian, baby.
Yes. Beige.
It wouldn't be German bureaucracy without a nice bit of beige.
But it is nice to think that people will be able to take care of this kind of stuff online. But what I have heard is that basically the best thing to do is to live in a village and to know the Bürgermeister or the mayor. Because I've heard stories of people having passports expedited in like days if you live in a small enough community.
When you have the right connect.
Yeah, with a Bürgermeister who's happy to pull some strings for you. Because if you're trying to do it with the Auslandbehörde here in Nuremberg, those waits can be pretty long.
Over the last month, we've discussed the growing support among many Europeans for a widespread boycott of US products as a reaction to US President Donald Trump's attempts to destabilize the EU and the recent introduction of tariffs across the world. I've been attempting to consciously avoid buying American goods, but I've been probably short of a full-scale boycott given how little I know about global supply chains. I've been a bit tricky since we've been talking about this topic. I've been more and more like considering what I should be avoiding, and you've obviously given me some food for thought. You're a bit more militant than me, though.
I'm not sure if I call myself militant, but yeah, maybe. I mean, I'm not going to like start like burning down Teslas or anything, but I have been overcome with the strong desire to to commit a crime, and it's only a crime in Germany and a few other countries. But like when I see Teslas now, there is a Pavlovian response where I just want to do like the Hitler Gruß at them, and it's like, I know I can't, but like that's the instinct. I'm like,
I think if you do that, that's going to be misinterpreted. That's
looking
up.
The way I do.
Yeah.
You can be like, an ally.
Yeah, exactly.
Shaved head. Yes,
shave your hand. Like,
he also enjoys a Tesla. Now, if a Tesla driver annoys me, I get double annoyed now.
I think they should just be massively embarrassed. That's how I feel. If you're driving around a Tesla at this point in time, you should feel bad.
I bought it before I knew Elon was crazy stickers. Like, they help a little bit, but...
Still, I know. I mean, no. I think if you've got a Tesla and you haven't got a sticker on the back that says that, then you're just probably a bit of a bell, aren't you? That's my assessment. Judge a book by its cover, kids. That's what I say. Do it every opportunity you get. With regards to my kind of boycott approach, I was looking at everything I own and then going like, it's all American. What are my favorite types of shoes? Usually Nikes. What are my favorite types of jeans? Levi's, Wranglers. Okay. What's my favorite t-shirt? That comes from America. Okay. So I've basically had to do a lot of more research than I was expecting. I thought it'd be relatively easy. Hardest thing to find was jeans. Like, what I found is you can get Diesel, which is Italian, I think. And
Diesel's so expensive and it's not
good. Yeah, exactly. G-Star Raw, I think also Italian. Again, really expensive. So you kind of, there's some other smaller.
Are you capable of looking at G-Star and not think of G-Spot? And when I see G-Star Raw, all I think about is like anal play. Like it's so distracting to me, and I can't believe it's a major brand.
It's not something I'd considered, but
Simon,
now you say
literally
it.
Got his hands on his head, looking truly shocked.
No, I think I can see where you're coming from, at least on that front.
Well, you wouldn't if we were doing G-Spot Raw.
No, not at all. I'm increasingly becoming, I can feel my face becoming flushed slowly from the neck upwards as I try and work out how to get out of this conversation.
The real solution, if you are like, if you want denim of like really high quality, it's going to last forever, then you go to Japan. The Japanese do denim. It's massively expensive. But it is like build for life quality and very, very good. So I guess that's the big alternative.
I mean, I got some recommendations that I thought were pretty good. There's a company called Replay. I think they might be German. Another one.
Yeah, they're massive. Replay.
Mavi, Lindberg. But they're like, again, I mean, they're good. They're really good quality and fine. But then again, you kind of like, I don't know. What I was thinking is I'm becoming just less inclined towards brands in general and just looking for quality across the board. I think that's the only way to go. And if you just like, I love a Converse shoe. I think that's part of my problem. But you can get perfectly good sort of Converse shoes anywhere. Does it need to be Converse? Does it need to be Nike?
I've never had a pair of Converse, so I don't know. But they look like they're very easy to replace. Like they're not like built with like major structures.
Super comfortable though, I think they're pretty much replaceable. And I think that's ultimately it. I mean, are you struggling to find the replacements?
On shoes, no, because we're an Adidas house for sure. So I don't have a single pair of Nikes. I've just got a load of Adidas, so that's a really easy one. When it comes to the jeans, yeah, I've got a load of Levi's that I bought when I was living in the States, so I'm good for the next 10 years. I don't think I'm going to need any more jeans. But like certain clothing brands, like I have a lot of Carhartt stuff, and I'm sad to see that go in future prospects. But the brand that I buy the most of is a company called Brixton, and their stuff's like really nice, good build quality. I've got a fucking load of it. So I'm stopping that. Their prices have also gone up dramatically in the last year, so I've always been a bit more put off by it. So clothing, I'm good for a while. I think the areas that are going to be the biggest struggle for me is like tech is a real struggle because there are no real alternatives for lots of stuff. Like Amazon is a tricky thing to cut out of our lives at this point, I think, especially living in the suburbs. I think if you live in a major city, you can go out and buy these things. But where I live, it's very, very hard. Microsoft, Apple, Google, Intel, AMD, Dell, like all that stuff's just really tricky. Facebook, Instagram, Netflix, all that kind of stuff as well. Gaming as well. Like there's not a European console that I'm going to go out and replace my Xbox with. A lot of the gaming studios as well. Of course, American. There are some really good European ones as well. Music equipment like Harman Kardon, JBL, stuff like that. It's tricky. I don't drink anymore, so alcohol is really easy. No problem there. But when I'm going on holiday, I use booking.com most of the time, and I've done a lot of Airbnb in the past. Those have to go. Food, I think, is the one area that we all have a lot of control over, and options are really easy. And I've talked about this a lot at work with some of my groups, and there have been some surprising ones because there are some brands that sort of sound and feel very European that aren't anymore. So, for example, Kraft. I think a lot of people think, oh, Kraft sounds like a German name. It's not. Heinz, of course, American. Toblerone is American-owned. Tuck. I have Tuck biscuits that are very nice with cheese. So a chive one that's lovely. Milka, American-owned. Cadbury, English staple, now American-owned.
Cadbury's a big one, yeah.
Carver. They do like powders for milkshakes. The graphic design looks like the most European thing ever. It looks like really crap. It's like no way an American company does. They're owned by the Americans. Marabu, Haagen-Dazs, of course. Some of the drinks as well that feel super German. Fanta, developed for the German market, is
Coca-Cola. Yeah.
Mezzomix.
Coca-Cola. Yeah.
Schwipp-Schwapp.
Is Schwipp-Schwapp American?
Schwipp-Schwapp's American.
Interesting.
Yeah. All Bananas is challenging. Chiquita and Dole. They're both American-owned companies these days. So I think, that's one area where we can be proactive. It's really easy to make a change because if you like Schwipp-Schwapp, then your local supermarket does its own version. If you like M&Ms, they're now €4 a bag in most supermarkets, so buy the own brand ones instead.
I mean, Spezi, there's a million different options, right? So, I mean, like, you can definitely get a low. I mean, the Augsburg Spezi is the originator, so...
I mean, Paulana do one as well. Like, there are loads of options.
Boo Paulana.
So,
avoid big Spezi. Go for small Spezi.
But I think there are these certain areas of life, like PayPal. Like, I use PayPal all the time, and I'm until like a really solid European version appears.
MasterCard, mate.
Yeah, MasterCard, Visa, Apple Pay, Google Pay.
It's a good lesson in how interconnected all these supply chains are, how fucked the whole situation is, and you become very aware when you start looking into like what can you avoid. And ultimately, you were talking last episode about sort of 20% ownership, and we've talked obviously about companies like Cadbury's and Milka being owned by American parent companies. And I think there's for me, I'm like, I'll just avoid obviously purchasing stuff. I don't have the energy or time to navigate every single purchase that I make. But if I'm trying to consciously purchase German and avoid certain products and know kind of which are the tricky ones that I might not be aware of. Things I just go, again, like shopping at Lidl would might be a good idea, because they just have, if you just buy own brands, my suspicion is a lot of those are going to be European produce in and of itself.
And there are plenty of examples of these own brand products being produced under really good conditions to be really high quality comparative with any major brand.
Exactly.
And they're cheaper. I mean, I talked last week or last episode about my DM moving away from American brands, and I was really surprised how cheap it was in the end. Like my shampoo, I've used Head & Shoulders. Even though I don't have hair, I need Head & Shoulders because I've got a beard. And that stuff's expensive today. The DM Housemarque version doesn't smell as nice. It doesn't smell like apples, but it's a third of the price. And
no itchy.
I'm happy. Yeah. So yeah, I'm going to advocate for DM for the rest of my life. I know that.
I was thinking when we were talking about it in the last episode that actually it's a chance to engage with like products that we maybe have avoided because we're like, they're uncool or like you can become a little kind of focused on the brand rather than the actual product. So maybe it's an opportunity to see what other options there are out there and support something that's maybe a bit more local, you know?
Yeah, brands that are maybe being uncool. What's really uncool? Donald Trump sabotaging the entire global market. That's real fucking uncool. So yeah, Bruno Banani, whatever your name is, I'm on board, son. Screw those Americans.
A few weeks ago, German news was full of reports covering the one-year anniversary of partial cannabis legalization. Since the 1st of April 2024, it's been legal to possess, grow, and through so-called cannabis clubs, purchase weed. Hooray! So, Simon, how much has life changed since the 1st of April 2024?
Well, I mean, the possession and the growing, that's definitely changed a lot. The cannabis clubs, as far as I'm aware, I don't think any are open.
Not in Bavaria, at least. I think
Bavaria, definitely not, no. Yeah, I mean, Markus Söder, the Bundeskanzler, said at the start he was going to legislate them to death. And that seems to be exactly what they're doing here. So I don't think any applications have even cleared being accepted as an application yet, never mind approved as a prospect. So in terms of how much things have changed, very, very little for a lot of people. If you are someone that used to buy your weed illegally, unless you've started to grow yourself or you've gone through the prescription model, then you're pretty much where you were a year ago, apart from the fact that you can't get nicked for having it. So that of course, changes for a lot of people. The prospect of not being arrested is nice. It's got to make life feel a little bit more relaxed. And you smell it in the streets. Oh, so yeah. People are more relaxed than they were 13 months ago.
You smell it in a lot more than you used to, certainly on, if you're going to city centres, like if I go into the centre of Augsburg, as we get close to the centre on the Strassenbahn, it begins to, there's more and more of the smell of weed. And when I was in Munich a while ago, there was, like you got into the centre and you could smell, like people had it, you could smell it in the station and you could smell it kind of on the street. So it's more, not visible obviously isn't the case, but certainly again, going to like bars, I've smelled it, people smoking it outside bars. St. Patrick's Day, you could smell it a lot. So it's a lot more out there.
I mean, weirdly, this is sort of one of the issues that legalization has brought around, because I think there are a lot of people who are against cannabis legalization, and some of them have legitimate reasons. The majority, it's just subject to like fear mongering that's existed for generations here. Mm. But I think one of the issues we face is that if you are someone that wants to smoke cannabis, the smell is the most offensive part to most people. Like if you are high and you're walking through the streets, people aren't going to notice most of the time. Like bloodshot eyes, whatever, pasty mouth, like no one's going to clock that. But if your weed stinks, that will get people's attentions, and it's definitely something you notice. Back home in the UK, one of the most dominant cannabis strains that sport sold is called Star Dog, with the WG, because it's cool. And that stuff stinks. Like it stinks so hard, because that's kind of good. If you're the dealer and you turn up and be like, look what I've got, smell that. And they're like, whoa, that's
really strong. Amazing. Right,
people will want to buy it. And so you have this like weird thing where the general public would be happier if it didn't smell as strong as it does. But like people who just like who are buying it illegally, but oh yeah, strong smell means good, and those two things aren't actually that strongly connected. And so I think if we could focus on developing a type of weed that doesn't stink,
yeah,
it would be good for the general public. So I think a lot of people, you do go to cities and you do think, like, Christ, like it just stinks of ganja. And if you don't like that smell, or if that triggers you, then I can understand people getting their blood pressure up on a weekly visit to the city centre.
Yeah. There's a lot more places with signs saying you can't smoke weed here. So most of it's bars and stuff like that saying like you can't smoke weed, but that's reasonable. And obviously we've had an election since the law change, the election just recently in February. And that was a big question ultimately for people who have interest in the topic of cannabis legislation in Germany, because the CDU and CSU had announced in their manifesto that they would immediately repeal the cannabis law. And they said this law protects dealers and exposes our children and young people to drug use and addiction, sounding like every single politician for the last 50 years.
See, this is the biggest problem I have with this position. This idea of protecting dealers is just nonsense. Like, there is nothing in the legislation that protects a dealer. And if they were serious about stopping dealers, then what they needed to do was legalize cannabis in a way where there was a point of access for people that wanted it. Where the fact of the matter is, unless you have the ability or the space to grow at home, which isn't for everyone, these tents take up a lot of space. If you're growing in your garden, you have to have a garden, and you have to have a garden that's big enough that it's not going to upset your neighbors, because it will smell for the latter stage of the grow. Like, that's it. Like, for a lot of people, you have to continue buying from your dealer. Whereas if there was a club where you could go legally and buy cannabis legally, like other countries have, then dealers wouldn't exist in the same way.
Yeah.
But at the moment, so many people who have been long-term users, like, I can't get Nick for anymore, but I still have to use my dealer because I can't buy it legally anywhere else. Mm. And so they've just set this trap. Well, like, we're going to legalize it partially, but we're going to make it so that you can't buy it anywhere legally. The dealers are still dealing because, look, we're arresting people still. They're dealing. Oh, naughty. Even with legislation, they continue to deal. Bad men. It's such a nasty little trap. But yeah, designed to fail was sort of the whole process as far as CDU, CSU and others.
But this is it. It's so defective. And as we'll see, there's a lot of support to reform it rather than repeal it. But it's so defective across the board that it's like, it's obvious it needs to be fixed, because you've also got like legal implications, because cannabis clubs now have 7-year like legal documents that say they have a license for 7 years from the state. Like, how do you fix that then? Like, how do you just take the license off them? Do they continue to operate but you've repealed the law? It doesn't, it's a complete like mismanagement of the panic that the law seemed to induce in the latter stages of its kind of debate.
And the weird part that's sort of going to be the hardest, I think, to change is like the sort of the covert medicinal element. Mm-hmm. Like, there are so many companies now where you can go online and you can get a prescription, answer a few questions about your health, and you will be able to get a prescription for cannabis. And then you go onto a website, order it, and it'll be sent to your home. And that is like the easiest way, the cheapest way, and in many ways, the simplest way of doing it. But it wasn't publicized in any major way. Like, I didn't hear about this at all in the run-up to this legislation. And now you have pharmacies all over the nation who have developed this infrastructure to supply this demand. And this is one of the first times where these pharmacies are actually paying like taxes. The tax on this is actually really, really productive at the moment. So this is one area where I think it's in the CDU or the union's interest to be like, oh, yeah, oh, it's terrible, isn't it? Terrible. Oh, so bad. Naughty people. Oh, we're just going to take this tax money and continue complaining about it. It's all performative nonsense.
It is. Yeah. And especially given that the SPD, although not the strongest advocates when legalization was debated, they were part of the traffic light coalition that brought it into effect. But they stated in their manifesto, with regard to cannabis, we want to take the necessary steps to enable legalization that complies with European law. So one of these like mealy-mouthed kind of middle-of-the-road answers, but essentially saying like, we just want to follow the law and do the right thing and fight organized crime and But and you can kind of see why this law came about and it was constructed in the way it did, because everyone was trying to cover their own arses instead of doing something sensible. But ultimately, cannabis law and the Gazettes itself has been a minor part of the coalition talks. There's obviously other issues that have been more pressing for obvious reasons. According to reports in Tagesschau, experts on addiction consider the political debate on cannabis to be misguided. They have said several hundred experts are urging the negotiating teams of the CDU, CSU and SPD to pay more attention to drug and addiction policy in the coalition talks rather than the focus on cannabis legalization. And they've said that from smoking to pathological gambling, around 1 in 10 people in Germany has an addiction problem, according to these experts. And more than that, there is less money for prevention in schools, for counselling services, and for the vital low threshold support services that prevent addiction. And they're appealing for among other things, a ban on advertising of alcohol and tobacco products, as well as sports betting, which I think we can all get behind. And it seems like there's more pressing concerns for Germany than whether people are smoking weed, ultimately.
It really feels like it. And even in the polls, you've got some data here for us. So the opinion polls are pretty divided. 38% support reversing legalization. This is a YouGov poll on behalf of the news agency DPA. 38%, so the same number, are for maintaining legalization within its current framework. 11% support even more liberalization with fewer restrictions, because there are too many restrictions for this to be sort of easy for a lot of people. I mean, like one of the weird ones, like, the amount of cannabis you're allowed to have in your house, I think it's 35 grams. If you grow a plant at home, you will have more than you're allowed to have, like immediately.
No, I think it's 50 grams in total you can have in your home. But with a prescription, I think you can have more. So,
well, I think it's 100 grams a month is a prescription. Like, yeah, which is an enormous amount. Yeah, enormous amount.
There's more than anyone could reasonably be. Unless you're Snoop Dogg, you shouldn't be smoking that amount in a month. But again, more power to you.
So, I mean, back to the poll, the clear majority stated they still do not smoke cannabis. 87% said they have not consumed cannabis since legalization. Quote, yes, but not because of legalization, said 4%. 3% reported smoking marijuana because of legalization.
You made me do it, 3%.
Yeah. What's this? I have to try everything that's legal.
So, yeah, the country's kind of divided down the middle on this. We've got experts saying we need to focus on the addiction side of issues rather than cannabis legislation. But more than that, we've also got the Gewerkschaft der Polizei, which is the police union, and they've said that they don't want to return to any of the old situation. And in fact, what they desperately want is for the legislation to be kind of updated and improved, because it hasn't reduced their workload. In fact, more than anything, it's increased it, because they've got to do a lot of monitoring of prohibited areas, especially in places like Bavaria, where there's a lot more restrictions. And they've actually described the law as a defective copy. And that was from the deputy chairman, Alexander Poyet. And in his view, they need to change the reform. Ambiguity and lack of control and verification options were the problems. And every day the law isn't improved, neither the black market nor youth protection or road safety will be improved. So, I mean, that's pretty clear from a lot of different sources. Reform, not repeal.
And if you polled the people who are pro-cannabis and said, do you want the black market, youth protection and road safety to be dealt with through money raised by sales of cannabis, everyone would be saying yes.
Yeah, of course.
There is massive upside to this, potentially. And nobody's like, yeah, I love weed, but I hate I hate protecting young people from it because it's totally fine. Everyone who smokes is aware that it's a bad thing for kids to do. No one is trying to sell this to kids. And so, yeah, it is the two faces of Germany, as always. The sort of the liberal, like open-minded, like, yeah, things aren't as bad. And the people like, oh, get back in your sheds because the weed monsters are going to come. They're gonna steal your sheep.
Yeah.
Like, it's just so old-fashioned, it's bizarre.
They're going to get high and cause havoc. I mean, interestingly, the Bundestag have released information about the most discussed topics over the last year. And Bundestag.de has reported that the Cannabis Act is the topic that's generated the most interest on their website. So it is something that interests people. And I think there's a lot of motivated people discussing it, but it is very clear that there's dividing lines and there's not a lot of certainty about what's going to happen.
I mean, that's fascinating, isn't it? The most interesting topic on the Bundestag administration website is cannabis legalization. That really says a lot. it's a really interesting opportunity, and I'm really pleased that it hasn't immediately become this, like, we're definitely getting rid of it straight after the election, because that was on the cards potentially. I mean, in many ways, if it just carries on as it is, it's a really, like, safe vote winner for anyone that's on the right. We're going to criminalize it again, and people are going to vote for it, and nothing will change.
Yeah.
And these people who voted for it will live in these nice communities where it isn't an issue. They're not going to be touched by it, and it'll be fine. And so hopefully the status quo just either stays as it is or gets some improvements so that there are better protections for people that need it, and more tax revenue that can be used for all sorts of positive things, and people who just happen to enjoy smoking a bit of weed aren't at risk of losing jobs, driving licenses, careers, if the systems are set up in a way that's sensible.
That brings us to the end of the show. Me and Simon are off to get some saucy photos from a nice photo shooting shop. He's going to cup my breasts. Good.
He's going to cup.
Sorry. If you're enjoying the podcast, why not give us a rating on Apple Podcasts, which only takes a minute and can really help us. You can also rate us on Spotify, so chuck some stars our way there as well. The podcast has accounts on Blue Sky and Instagram, so feel free to follow us on those social media channels. Just search for Decades From Home to find us. As ever, if you have any questions, feedback, or maybe an article or topic you'd like us to cover, reach out via any of our social media channels or get us on decadesfromhome@gmail.com. If you have time, take a look at 40%german.com, where weekly articles are up every Saturday. All that's left to say is thanks, and be some next time. Tschüss!
Ciao!